An international fight among plane makers just gained a new player.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Bluehost. Over 2 million bloggers worldwide bring their unique voice to the web with Bluehost's website building and hosting tools. Learn more at bluehost.com/marketplace. And by Fox Searchlight, presenting Goodbye Christopher Robin, about Winnie the Pooh author A.A. Milne and his son, starring Donald Gleason and Margot Robbie, now playing in select theaters.
From Marketplace in Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams in for David Brancaccio. Canadian jet manufacturer Bombardier is selling the majority stake in its popular C-Series plane to the French company Airbus. Airbus is Europe's largest aerospace group, and this deal comes as Bombardier seeks an edge in an ongoing trade fight with America's Boeing. Boeing has accused the Canadian company of using unfair subsidies to get ahead. For more on this story, I'm joined by BBC business editor Simon Jack. Good morning.
Good morning, Kimberly.
So the U.S. recently slapped a 300% preliminary tariff on Bombardier over the C-Series plane. What does this deal mean for that fight?
Well, potentially, it means they might be able to find a way of circumventing that crippling tariff. And the reason for that is there is a chance that Airbus, which has facilities in Alabama, could produce the C-Series jets inside the U.S. So that potentially could get around that nasty tariff issue. Now, there are lots of questions to be asked about that. They'll have to import the parts. Will this be a solution which is acceptable to the Department of Commerce in the U.S.? But on the face of it, it's an elegant solution to at least that thorny problem.
And Airbus is spending basically nothing on this majority stake. Why does Bombardier want to give away this ownership stake for free?
Well, Bombardier's had a plenty of financial troubles, and in 2015 it almost went bust. It had to get bailed out essentially by the Canadian and Quebec and UK governments. Now, that has constrained it selling planes in markets like Asia. With Airbus, they get themselves a powerful backer, and that will make people think they've got better sales, marketing, a bit of global muscle. But you're right, a lot of people are saying, hang on a second, the Canadian taxpayer paid for this plane to be developed. Airbus are getting a box-fresh plane, which everyone seems to like, practically for nothing.
Simon Jack is the BBC's business editor. Thank you so much.
Okay.
And let's do the numbers. France's CAC 40 is down slightly this morning, less than 1%. The FTSE in London is up about 0.2%. Japan's Nikkei is up about 80 points, about 0.4%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are mixed this morning. The Senate Banking Committee meets today for another hearing about the Equifax data breach. Now that major credit reporting agencies are woven into the fabric of our financial system, what can Congress actually do to protect consumers? Marketplace's Ryan Kailoth reports.
The nation may be divided, but one thing enjoying bipartisan support right now? Publicly flogging Equifax for its data breaches.
Everybody's angry about Equifax, and for once they're looking for solutions.
Ed Merzwinski of the U.S. Public Interest Research Group says there are two fixes everyone agrees on.
The first thing I think Congress can do is to make freezes free for everybody.
Freezing your credit report prevents hackers who have your data from opening new accounts in your name. But the three big credit firms generally charge for the service, and fees can build up. Second solution?
We need to get away from using the Social Security number.
In other words, keep it away from hackers by not using it in the first place. But Patrick Henry, a Republican congressman from North Carolina, says in the end, we may have to re-examine the role of credit bureaus overall.
There's a larger question about the utility of credit reporting agencies in a modern environment around big data.
That's a problem that won't be solved in a single hearing. In New York, I'm Ryan Kailoth for Marketplace.
Cities across North America are sending their best pitches to Amazon as the company looks to set up a second headquarters. Seattle is home to the first headquarters and is among the cities making a bid. But residents there are split between those wringing their hands over the company's possible expansion elsewhere and those who say, we don't want it. Thanks. Anna Boyko-Wyrock brings us the view from the streets of Seattle.
Two dozen people zigzagged through Seattle's South Lake Union neighborhood. A local blog called The Urbanist organized the tour about the history of this neighborhood, the location of Amazon's first headquarters. In a few years, the view has morphed from warehouses to
lots of tall, big modern apartment buildings, those luxury apartment buildings. cranes. There's a lot of cranes.
It looks like a millennial paradise, kind of.
Seattle residents Beth Friedman, Lee Haddix, and Anthony Bridgewater took the tour. The city's recent changes are dizzying. In 10 years, the population went up over 20%. The median home price went up around 50% to $730,000. The region is home to a lot of Fortune 500 companies, all driving growth, though Amazon is Seattle's largest employer. Pam Carter has lived in Seattle for decades. She and her husband recently moved across town.
Our house no longer exists. We sold to developers who put up a five-story apartment building.
We passed by one high-rise. Carter remembers when it went up.
You suddenly couldn't see the Olympic Mountains, and I hated that.
Terry Frangiadakis moved to Seattle in the 90s.
When we first came here, we felt like it was an empty city. There was a lot of parking lots. It was kind of desolate.
Now, he says, it gets more vibrant every year.
The restaurants are good, and the people are milling around, and they're living in the city. I think it's great.
But the city wasn't prepared for the boom, especially not in the housing market, says Ethan Phelps Goodman with the organization Seattle Tech for Housing. He says Amazon's next host should get ready quickly so low and middle-income people don't get priced out.
You're going to need to build abundant housing to go along with all those jobs that are going to stream in, not just for the Amazon employees, but for the restaurant workers and the baristas and the security guards and the many, many jobs that'll be created by all that new wealth.
Amazon says it's a boon to Seattle's economy and gives back through philanthropy and volunteering. The company will announce the location of its second headquarters next year. In Seattle, I'm Anna Boyko-Wyrock for Marketplace.
Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, Daniel Shin, and Chris Olin. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.